Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 4 of the Lose Weight, Create Life podcast. My name is Ryan Tomko, and today we are joined by Jesse Brizendine. Jesse is a life coach, personal trainer, speaker, author of the book, Ouch, My Heart is Broken, and also recently released a TED Talk called Grief is Not a Life Sentence. Jesse has been a big influence on my life, as well as many other people, through his Instagram, through his Facebook and YouTube channel, at Jesse Brizendine. Jesse talks all about success, leadership, goal setting, mindset, and just how to become a better person. I think you'll really get a lot out of this interview, and if you do, please feel free to share this with a friend who this message you think may be of use to. And without any further ado, please welcome my mentor, coach, and friend, Jesse Brizendine. Jesse, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm so grateful for your time and you being here with me today. Thank you so much.
Hey, Ryan, thank you for having me, man. I've been waiting for this day. Excitedly.
Yes, as am I. I'm so excited for it as well. Jesse, please give us some insight into your fitness journey, maybe when you were younger, kind of like your start into the world of fitness nutrition.
Yeah, you know, I got into it in the way that many people got into it. I saw Arnold Schwarzenegger movies. I can remember vividly being about 6 or 8 years old and watching the second Conan for the first time. And the opening scene is this really dramatic scene where there's slow motion and the horses are riding, people riding horses, and there's this dramatic music. And I kept asking, my mom had told me about this guy and it has these big muscles. And I kept asking my mom, is that Arnold? And she goes, no. And she goes, is that Arnold? No. Is that Arnold? No. And then it pans to Wilt Chamberlain. I go, that's got to be Arnold. And she goes, no. And then it cuts to the scene and Arnold's kneeling on the ground with the sword planted firmly into the ground at the altar where Valeria had cremated Valeria in the previous one. And the camera pans up and the music shifts. And then there's this shot of Arnold. They're all ripped. And my mom goes, and I'll never forget. She goes, now that's Arnold. And I remember as a little kid going, wow,
yeah.
He's got big muscles.
Yeah.
You know, and from then I was hooked. I really wanted to look like Arnold. And I would read Muscle Fitness. I'd do all those types of things. The problem with it, Ryan, was I had zero self-confidence. I had zero self-esteem. I absolutely despised the person I was. Mm. I had a daily monologue of how worthless I was, what a waste of space I was, how I was God's punishment to my parents. I mean, you name it, any sort of negative thing you could say to yourself, I was saying that to myself. Right. And because of that, I had this idea, this dream of trying to look like Arnold, but I could never get myself to exercise or eat healthy because I didn't believe in myself. I didn't think I was capable of it. I didn't think I could do it. So it was always in the back of my mind. It was always a goal I had, but it was something that I never pursued when I was younger because of my self-talk was so horrible.
Yeah. Now, would you say you were a smaller kid growing up, or were you a little heftier? What were you like when you were younger?
Yeah, so I remember being in third grade and eating pasta one night and thinking that, you know, the scale was at like 98 pounds. And if I ate enough pasta, maybe I'd weigh over 100 and that was going to be a really cool thing.
Yeah.
And then by the time I got to fourth, fifth grade, I was a really chunky kid. I remember there was a time where a teacher had everybody put their weight on the board. And I was so ashamed of writing my weight because it was the heaviest one in the class. Mm. When we had to run the mile, I was the slowest one in the class, except for this one girl named Chelsea, who, God bless her, she was, you know, tiny and she had horrible asthma. And the only reason that she was slower than me is because her asthma was so bad that it was really hard for her to take more than a few steps at a time.
Right.
I was like the only boy in the class that when we did the fitness test, I couldn't do a pull up. I had to hang for 10 seconds and I couldn't even do that because of my weight. And so I was a really chunky kid. And then I hit a growth spurt in later on in junior high and high school, where I went from being really chunky to being kind of scrawny, skinny. And then when I left for college, I went into college. I was probably about 6'3", maybe 160, 165 pounds. You know, to put that in perspective, I'm probably 220 something now. And the biggest I got when I was really working out hard was about 242,
Yeah, that's interesting, because looking at you now, you're a pretty tall guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you carry it super well, because I know from seeing pictures of you, you're pretty tall. So for you to carry it so well, it's hard to believe that you're even over 200 pounds, honestly. Now, what was it for you that was able to push you into the gym then and get you to start working out? Were you involved with sports at all growing up, or what did that all look like?
Yeah, so great question, Ryan. I played sports as a kid, and then when I got into, as I got older and my negative self-talk got worse and worse and worse, what little bit of confidence I had in sports was diminished. When I got into high school, I gave up all sports. I was really, really good at basketball, and I didn't play. I remember I went to one game in high school, and I sat in the stands and was watching, and there was a parent of one of the other players sitting next to me. And about midway through the game, she looks over at me and she says, "Jesse, that should be you out there. This team could have really used you." And I remember it felt like getting punched in the stomach, and I never went back to a game again for the rest of my high school career. I refused to go because I knew I had potential. I had talent to play, but I had such little self-esteem, such little self-confidence that I couldn't bring myself to do it. I was terrified.
Right.
And so what finally got me to turn things around, Ryan, was my low self-esteem, low self-confidence kind of hit an apex going into college. I was so shy, so insecure that I remember sitting in my Psych 1 class and this girl tapped me on the shoulder to ask me a question about the homework. And I skipped pink and red and went straight to purple. I mean, my face went completely purple. I broke out in a full sweat. Like, this girl talking to me was so out of my comfort zone. And yeah. She never sat next to me again after that, by the way. Which I can't imagine why. I was so socially awkward that I remember a time this guy introduced himself, and this was during like the first week of school, and I was shaking. I didn't even know how to introduce myself. And so I did what anybody would do probably, at least for me. I started drinking, and I really started drinking more and more and more, because if I was drunk, then I was, you know, my inhibitions were down. I was a little bit more social. I could be a little bit more charismatic. A little bit funny. Fortunately, I had one of those moments that are really kind of defining moments in life where I got so drunk one night in the dorms that I ended up spending about 3 to 4 hours that night passed out in the toilet, my face buried in the toilet. And this is a public bathroom, keep in mind, public.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of butts sitting on these seats. And this is also an 18-year-old bathroom. So there's a lot of people who aren't aiming the best.
Oof.
And yeah. I'm camping out there like that. Woke up in the morning, didn't remember anything. There was this vomit dust that they put down when you throw up in your room. I had it all over the room. I'd thrown up all over myself, all over my bedding. I got put on academic probation from the dorms. My grades were so bad, I got put on disqualification from the school, which is basically a nice way of them saying, "Hey, you're screwing up so bad that you're bringing our numbers down. So if you don't get your you know what together, we're kicking you out."
Right.
And I remember having this moment where I walked into the bathroom and I was standing in front of the mirror and I didn't even recognize the person looking back at me. I had these dark circles under my eyes, and I had, you know, I was kind of a skinny, scrawny kid at the time, but I was starting to get a beer belly.
Yeah.
And I was looking at myself, Ryan, and I realized something really profound at that moment. I had worked really hard academically to get myself out of the area I grew up, to give myself a shot at life. And I'd never been one to quit once I had begun something. I didn't want to give up. I didn't want to be like other people who gave up because they were too scared to be away from home for some reason that didn't make sense to me, despite my fear of so many other things. But if I was just not good enough, you know, if it wasn't because of me, but I got kicked out, that would make it justifiable. And I realized that I was on this fast track to get myself kicked out of school and end up back home. And the reason why was because I was too scared. I was too self-conscious. I had no self-esteem. And I thought to myself, like, "Jesse, you got to give yourself a chance." And as I'm standing there in front of the bathroom, I had this flashback to my 6 to 8-year-old self seeing Arnold Schwarzenegger in the first scene in Conan. And going to myself and saying, "I know I have to exercise. Part of my esteem issues come with my physical body and how I feel about myself physically." And I said, I need to change that. And so I made myself a deal. I was going to commit to really studying hard that quarter and get my grades up and get myself out of trouble to school. And then once I did that, starting in the spring, I was going to work out. And I made rules for myself with exercising. Accountability is so crucial. It was, I had to go to the gym at least 5 days a week, 5 to 6 days a week. I had to stay in the gym no matter what. I had to stay in there at least an hour and a half to 2 hours. And I had to do at least, you know, like 12 repetitions of everything. But when it got to the point where it felt like it was going to burn, and that's when we all want to quit, no matter what, I had to do 3 to 5 more reps from there.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that was really what started me right there, Ryan, was just that moment in time. I think that all of us, we have moments in time. We come to the proverbial crossroads, and it's when we're at those crossroads that this course of our life, the trajectory of our life, can forever change. And our life as we know it can turn into something radically different. I wouldn't be sitting here talking with you if I wouldn't have taken that path. You know, my whole entire life would have been different. My life changed, or not even changed, my life transformed the day I walked into that bathroom and looked myself in the eye and made the decision to go into the gym and start working out.
That's amazing. Now, when you first went into the gym, you had those really strict guidelines for yourself, which is amazing. I don't know that many people have the, you know, capacity to do that right off the bat for somebody relatively new to it. Did you have a guideline or a program that you were following at the time, or were you just kind of going in there and kind of figuring it out on your own?
Yeah, I was totally figuring it out on my own, Ryan. Keep in mind, I was so intimidated of the gym at this point that I remember my first week of school, I walked into the gym, and I walked in, and the gym at the school had this kind of U-shaped where you could go in, and there's one room, and then you could walk kind of through this little walkway, and then there would be the second room, and then you could walk out the other way. And I walked in, and I said to myself, holy shit, there are so many big guys, and there's so many good-looking girls in here. I do not belong. I'm going to get devoured. I'm going to get eaten alive. They're going to figure out I'm a fake, phony, and imposter. So I walked through their other room, walked out the other door, and I didn't go back.
Yeah.
And my early days of it was just trying to basically, you know, make myself stay. And I would just go to whatever machine was open and use it. And if somebody else came by and seemed like they wanted to use it, I would let them use it. And I remember one of the things that really changed the game for me, Ryan, was I was on a preacher curl machine, which is, you know, you sit down and you have your arms over a pad and you do like bicep curls with it. I was doing that, and that was probably one of my stronger movements at the time because I bowled. I'd done bowling when I was younger, so I had pretty strong forearms and biceps from bowling. Whoever knew bowling was such an active muscle building sport, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I remember I had done a set and I was finished and I was, you know, resting a minute until I did the next one. And some guy comes over and says to me, can I work in with you? Now, as soon as he says that, my fear voice goes, holy F, this guy needs this machine. I'm in his way. I got to get out of here. He's going to realize I'm a fake. I don't belong, all these types of things. And I said, oh, no, you can have it. You can have it. And he stops when he says, hey, no, I don't want it. He said, we can share it. He says, I'll go. And then you go, I'll go and you go. And I said, really? He said, yeah, totally. It's fine. And I was kind of like, you know, that scene in movies where you'll see the people trying to find the wild dog or the wild cat, and they put the food in the cat, or the dog kind of timidly reaches out for the food. It was kind of the same thing with me with that, but it changed my life because I realized that all these people who I was perceiving as being judgmental and as being monsters who are just in there like, and, you know, looking at me as this little peon or whatever. Yeah. It wasn't that at all. Every single person in there was a beginner. They had just started a little sooner than me and they'd kept going.
Right.
Every single person in there had their own story, every single person in there had their own insecurity, their own fear that they had to overcome. The difference was, is they had just had a few more months or a few more years of doing the reps.
It's so interesting to get that perspective. I know when I first started, there were many a times where I would go to the gym and just sit in the parking lot and look inside. And I was just like, holy crap, I don't know that I can walk in there. There's so many people in there.
Yeah.
I thought the same exact way. I thought, man, I'm going to walk in there. They're going to go, who's this chubby dude trying to exercise? Right. And it's like you said, it's so funny because you think that right off the bat because a lot of the people in there are really in shape. But some of those people are so nice and so respectful, so kind. it kind of takes you back a little bit, and you're just like waiting for them to, you know, kind of like stab you in the back or something.
It's
such an interesting dynamic and such an interesting perspective to understand, because when you first start losing weight, you think the spotlight's on you and everybody's staring at you that whole time. And it's really just not the case.
No, it's not at all. It's a room full of people who all had to begin, and they all had their own beginnings. Yeah. It's a room full of people who are all fighting their own internal battles. They're all working through their own stuff. It's a room full of people that are dealing with death, divorce, heartache, heartbreak, you know, success, failure, a room full of people who have family members who are sick, who have their own fears, their own insecurities, a room full of people who are terrified of being judged, terrified of how others are thinking about them, a room full of people who remember their journey and they're proud of themselves. It's a room full of humanity. And the reason, the thing that I found over the years that holds people back from walking through those doors, is they don't see the humanity. They only focus on themselves. Mm. It's a really interesting thing that the thing that we're afraid of, being judged by others, we often keep ourselves frozen from ever beginning because we're so focused on judging ourselves. And we don't realize that everybody else in there is fighting the same battle as we are.
That's so beautifully said, and so true. Everybody really is going through something and is there for their own reason, has their own insecurities. And very, very well said. Now, after you get your foot into the gym, you start building muscle, getting stronger, getting more fit, growing your self-confidence, I'm sure. You eventually, from what I understand, start getting into personal training, and you started, I'm unfamiliar if it was your company or if it was a partnership. Fill me in on your start getting involved in training clients.
Yeah. So fast forward a few years, right? I put in the reps and stuck with it, stuck with my promise. Like I had said, I ended up gaining over the next 2-3 years of working out consistently, I gained probably 50, 60 pounds of muscle.
Wow.
You know, from the time I was 18, 19 years old until I was about 22, just working out regularly 5-6 days a week, you know, all those types of things. And I had still not decided on what I wanted to be when I grew up in college, and you're supposed to have a major, and I was coming up against a deadline. And I remember walking through campus one day thinking to myself, what do I want to do after school? What do I want to be? And I had this thought, and the thought was, and it wasn't even just a thought, it was a feeling. It was like a sense of knowing. And it was, you know, what if I did personal training? Realizing how much fitness had transformed my life, not just because of the physical body, but what I was really keen on was, because I exercised, it transformed how I felt about myself. And I remember thinking to myself, gosh, this would be such a great gift to share with other people, to be able to help them work through their challenges so that they could feel better about themselves, so they could get some confidence, so they could get some self-esteem, so they could feel all those types of things that I've been able to feel, because I knew how low I had been. While I wasn't anywhere near the heights that I wanted to be at, I was on my way up. And I thought, God, it would be such an awesome thing to do professionally, earn a living doing that. So I started off I started teaching some group classes. Fortunately, left the college I was at had a program as a minor that was focused on fitness training and personal training, and I did enrolled in that. I started teaching some group classes, and I eventually was able to work as a personal trainer at a 24-hour fitness, and that's like a big box gym that you'll see around the U.S. And then I did that for a few years, and then I started working for myself as a trainer, and did that as a self-employed trainer for a while. I was doing online programs with it where I was helping people with weight loss, muscle gain. I was teaching other people how to grow their fitness businesses and all that. And it was an absolutely wonderful and beautiful time in my life that I just met so many amazing people through it. I created so many wonderful friendships and memories because of it. And it's the irony of course, the thing that I used to fear the most became the source of some of my greatest joys. Oh. And some of my most beloved memories and the most cherished memories I have, Ryan, I would have never had I not begun exercising.
Now, when you look back on your time working with all sorts of different clients, I'm sure, what do you think is the hardest thing for people to either understand or grasp before they get started? What do you kind of think is holding people back from getting to their real potential physically?
Yeah, it's their own mind. It's their own mind and the stories they're telling themselves and the belief systems they have about it. There are so many people who will tell themselves the story of, you know, either they can't because of the other people in the gym, it's scary, it's intimidating, or that they don't have time, they don't have the energy, they don't have this, they don't have that, right? It's always that. It's people hold themselves back. Somebody who's committed to it, they could do a phenomenal workout at home in 20 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever it is, and they can make it work. You know, I used to tell people when they'd say, well, I don't have time for this. I'd say, well, do you have time for a heart attack? Yeah. And that puts things in perspective for them.
Yeah.
Right. Because we use our excuses to help us make it through the day. We all know in some way, shape or form what we need to do, but we bullshit ourselves through the day because we start to get to a point in our life where we're living life without clarity, without vision. And what we're doing instead then is we're just trying to make it through the day. We're trying to survive another day, so to speak. You know, that might be a little bit of a dramatic word, but I think that the people who it'll resonate with. And part of the reason that we learn how to survive or make it through another day is by justifying things, making excuses about it, right? Time, energy, money, those are the biggest ones. Also about what people are going to think about us, what people are going to, how they're going to judge us, how we're going to be perceived and all those types of things. Eventually, time goes on. It keeps continuing. And all of a sudden, we wake up one day and we're struggling with weight, our joints hurt, we're malnourished, we're having some sort of disease. We get that oh, crap, now what am I going to do? Fear. Even with that, oh, crap, I'm now going to do fear, we still may find reasons to excuse ourselves and let ourselves out of it because it's hard.
Yeah,
it's really hard to get going, to get to the point on the other side where it's good. Once you get into it, it can be one of the most pleasurable and rewarding experiences of your life. But getting started with it is freaking hard.
It is.
It's freaking hard.
100%. Yeah, it's, I know for me, I mean, there were so many starts, stops. Even, you know, today, I'm finally on a good streak. However, before this, as you know, I was start and stop. And even for somebody that knows what they're doing in the gym, it can be difficult to get in that right mindset. And speaking of mindset, kind of everything you encapsulated there, what do you think, or what piece of advice do you have somebody who's constantly in their head, can't get out of their head, constantly beating themselves up? What advice do you have to somebody that is falling under that scenario?
I would recommend everybody who's doing that have a conversation with that voice. And here's why. Every thought we think, I used to frame thought processes and emotions in positive, negative, just to give us a framework to look at things. But as I evolve in my study of humanity and the work I do with people, I tend to not label things negative, positive as much before, because I think even the quote unquote negative thoughts, the quote unquote negative feelings, they have some sort of positive intention behind them. The problem is that when we hear it, we have a literal interpretation of it. We don't have a conversation with it. So let me give you an example. Somebody who's overweight and they might say, okay, I need to eat healthy. I want to exercise. And so they start exercising, they eat healthy, they make it a couple of days, and then they wake up the next morning, they're a little sore, they're a little tired, and they kind of have a craving. And so they tell themselves, no, I'm going to stick with this. But then that voice pops up in their head and says, you know, what's the point, fatty? You know you can't do this anyways. You should just give up. You've earned that cheesecake. You've earned that piece of this or whatever. Or it's not going to hurt just for one day to rest, right?
Right.
And so then what we hear is we hear that voice, we hear that message, and we say, okay, and accept it as gospel. Because we've trained ourselves so much to look for, again, excuses, reasons, justifications to keep us where we are. But if somebody were to, in that moment, take a breath and ask that voice a question, right? So here, let's role play this, Ryan. What's one of the voices that you've struggled with the most that's maybe been negative, quote unquote negative, that's kept you from exercising or eating healthy the way you know you should?
One of the things I would constantly tell myself was, you know, I'm not deserving to have a body like that, and I can't get there. I can't do it.
Awesome. Perfect. So I'm not deserving to have a body. I can't get there. I can't do it. Have you ever asked yourself, why am I not deserving to have a body? So why are you not deserving? Just role play with me, Ryan. Why are you not deserving to have a body? And just notice what comes up. See, you already felt something shift for you right there, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So why are you not deserving to have a body like that?
I'm not good enough. I'm not as good as those people on Muscle and Fitness or the big bodybuilders on Instagram.
Cool. Awesome. Perfect. What would you need to do to be good enough to be as good as those bodybuilders and muscle fitness are on Instagram?
Oof, good question. I would just need the hard work, the gene that they have. How, you know, they have some superpower gene that gets them the body they have. That's what I need. I don't have it.
Let me ask you this. With the gene that they have, is the genetics going to lift the weights for them?
It's not.
No. So genes are not, right? How many people out there right now around the world have the potential to be a LeBron James, a muscle and fitness model, all those things, but they don't put the genetics to work? Probably quite a few, right?
Right.
So, but just notice what happens there. As you start to have that conversation with yourself, what you end up discovering is that initial voice, that initial self-talk that you have, isn't necessarily just, see, our problem is we take it literally and we accept it as the gospel. But when you have a conversation with it, you start to uncover that it's actually telling you what you need to do to get to what you want. See, what you're saying to yourself is you're not good enough because you're not like these people who have these magazines who are on there. And then, so that's telling us, okay, what do you want? What's a long-term goal you have? You want to get to like that. Okay, so how did they get there? What is something that they did on the first day? Well, they probably went to the gym. They probably did some push-ups. Could you realistically do some push-ups right now?
Yeah.
For sure. And then you can go and read a little bit more. What do they all talk about? You notice that when they first start talking, you look at any of those people and you hear any of the interviews and you hear any of their stories about their journey. They don't talk about looking ripped and shredded from day one. What do they talk about? They talk about the pump. Talk about, yeah, the feeling, right?
Yeah.
Because the feeling, the emotion, our muscles don't change overnight. We don't get, fat doesn't fall off overnight, despite what some of those clever product placements will tell us.
Yes.
You know, the reality of it is it all happens over time, which is why any person who's an expert at anything, they always talk about the feeling first. If you watch Pumping Iron with Arnold, to go back to Arnold again, what did he talk about over and over again? He talked about the pump. He talked about the feeling. You read all those articles, they all talk about the same thing. They would all say, how I feel, how I feel, how I feel. See, all of us, whether we're 500 pounds overweight, we're 500 pounds underweight, we're anything and everything in between, all of us can create a feeling.
Hmm.
If we do 5 push-ups, we're going to get some pump. We're going to have blood moving through us. And then we can say to ourselves, okay, so in that negative self-talk, I'm not good enough. I'm not on the same caliber as these people are. And then you read between the lines and say, okay, they're really talking about how the feeling, the pump. And then you go and say, you actually have a conversation with that voice. You do the exercise. You feel the feeling. You have the pump. And then you look and say, holy shit, I just accomplished what they did. I got the feeling. Maybe I am good enough. Maybe I am on the path that they started on before too.
Beautifully said. Yeah. And I think once you get started, you really start to see that, especially with people that have made a significant change, and you see the before and after. That's,
yeah,
so very well said. Now, I want to be very cognizant of your time, Jesse, and I do want to transition into talking about your life coaching now. You, mm-hmm, you've been doing this for over 10 years, is that right, your life coaching?
Yeah, I've been doing it for a while now.
After transitioning from your personal training, what got you into doing life coaching? What was it that started that new journey for you?
Great question, Ryan. So it was actually from personal training this was born. I had a lady who I was working with at the time when I was training. And she had this rare neuromuscular disease that affected like 1 in 20-some million people, where what would happen was, without warning, her neuromuscular system would almost, it was almost, it would like get shut off. Like there's a switch, and she would go into these kind of convulsions where her body would shut down and she would lose all control over her muscles. And it was like somebody just turned the light switch off. Or, you know, when we have a power surge and everything gets short circuited.
Right.
It was exactly like that. And there was one time it happened during the middle of our session. We were working out. I remember vividly what machine we were on. And she looks up at me and she says, uh-oh. And I said, what's going on? She said, it's starting to happen. I go, what's starting to happen? She goes, I don't remember what exactly she called it, but she said, it's happening. And I watched her stand in front of me and her whole body locked up and started contorting in these weird, like Circus Olay-esque ways. And she couldn't get, and I remember looking at her, and her name was Joyce. And I said, Joyce, do you trust me? And she said, yeah. And I said, can I try? On my life, I could see this ball of energy on her eye. And so I pushed my thumb on it and kind of pushed it off, almost as if like to give it a deep tissue massage.
Yeah.
And when that happened, like her body started to move again. And she looks at me and she has tears in her eyes. And she says, what did you do? And I have tears in my eyes. And I said, I don't know. But I told her what I saw. And Joyce was teaching master's level psychology at the time. And she said, Jesse, you have a real gift with people. You need to do more with it. And I said, Joyce, I know. I'm not quite sure what that looked like. Well, fast forward from that, that's really where coaching started to evolve from. I recognize so much, Ryan, that everything is our mindset, our heart set. It's the key to everything. We could go into the gym and you could have absolutely ripped abs. You could be in amazing shape. But if you don't have your mind and your heart right, you're going to hate yourself. You know, we've right. all heard the stories of the millionaires at the edge of the bridge that seem to have it all. And then they jump off because inside they feel completely empty and void of meaning. I wanted to make a bigger impact. I want to reach, in my lifetime, I would love to positively impact 2 billion with a B people, and coaching and speaking gave me a bigger platform for that. And it allowed me to, even more significantly, it allowed me to make immediate change with people, you know, just in our conversation there and prompting you to have a conversation with that voice, you could feel an instant shift. And that instant shift may serve you much longer. And you're going to have that. And so you can take that with you right away, as opposed to it might take a few weeks until we really see the results of push-ups and sit-ups and squats and lunges and all those types of things are from our nutrition. But with mindset and heart set shifts, they can shift instantly and they can be permanent. And I really wanted to help people make those bigger shifts and start to work with people like yourself and others who are trying to make a difference in the world and trying to help others and help them become the better versions of themselves so they could help more people and cause bigger ripples like that. So then there's lots of more people being helped along the way.
That's such an incredible story. That's the first time I'm hearing it. And just, wow, it's so inspiring for you to share that. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you, man, for giving me a chance to share.
Absolutely. Now, what do you do every day, Jesse? What do you do every day to help develop a stronger mindset? What kind of self-practice or routines do you have in place to help keep a strong, determined mindset for yourself?
So I typically start my day right away with some sort of exercise. I wake up usually about 3:30 in the morning, and then I head straight to the gym. One of the things I do when I get to the gym is I compliment myself right from the get-go. So I usually park on the street, and it sounds silly, but it's really powerful. I'll get out of the car and I'll compliment my parking job. Say, oh, that was a really good parking job. You know, trying to get the wheels lined up with the red as closely and perfectly as possible. Mm-hmm. And the reason that's important and powerful is because we don't compliment ourselves enough. We don't say enough kind things, and it primes our mind to start looking for positives right away. I go and get a good workout. And then after that, I usually will check for the sunrise, and I really allow some time to just reflect on gratitude. I do a daily gratitude post on social media, which I've done every single day now for 2 years and 99 days straight. So what is that? 800 plus days of gratitude daily, every single day. Yeah. And the reason I do that is because it primes me at the end of the day to focus on something I'm grateful for, focus on something I'm grateful for. I don't believe there's bad days. I believe there's bad moments. And that even in our worst days are usually comprised of some moments that are really awful. You think of your darkest days you've had, Ryan, and you and I both know what some of those are. But before those specific moments happen, you were probably having a decent day before that. And it's the case for most of us too. And there's lots of things every day that could go wrong for us that can make our day far worse than it really was. So it's moments that we have, and there's gratitude to be found in every day. So having some sort of gratitude to anchor myself at the beginning of the day, starting my day with a compliment, ending my day with gratitude, and really working to choose to see love, people from a place of love. I've become more and more aware of just how powerful that is. I'll give you one quick example of this. I had a business relationship with someone who, you know, they did some things I didn't necessarily agree with. And then they went and started pursuing other things. And there was something about that really kind of ticked me off. And it wasn't so much that they were doing the other things. It was more like we didn't make it work together. And it was a completely ego-driven thing. And it was completely about me satisfying me, as opposed to looking at the other human being there and saying, okay, here's another human being there that's full of vulnerabilities and insecurities. Here's another human being there that's doing the best they can with what they have. Here's another human being that's just trying to make their way through life the best they can. And did they really set out to probably screw me over? No, not at all. It just didn't work out. But it was my ego wanting to make me so significant to the other person that was hurting me. It wasn't them. It was me hurting me. Working to the place of seeing people from a better place, recognizing that every human being out there is doing the best they can with what they have in any given moment. Some of us are a little bit more resourceful than others, moment to moment. But we're all doing the best we can, and each person that we encounter has their own fears, their own hopes, their own dreams, their own insecurities, their own struggles, their own challenges that they're all working through. You know, going back full circle to where we started with in the beginning, that's what makes gyms such beautiful places of humanity, because you put everybody under one roof and everybody's working through the same stuff and they're using the same process to try to work through it. And they're all working after and they're all going for something that's meaningful to them.
It's so true and so well said. Before I ask you my final question for you, I want to take a second and acknowledge you. Jesse, you show up in such an amazing way in people's lives every day, and it's nonstop for you, which is truly incredible. And like you had said, a post every day for going on 3 years now almost is incredible. Not only that, you show up with videos seemingly every day on YouTube, Facebook, and then your Instagram stories. You show up in such an amazing way, and I know that if people aren't already following you now, they will be soon, because you have such a gift for what you're giving to people, and you've definitely changed my life, and I know you're going to change hundreds, thousands more going forward. So thank you for all that you do, and I'm sure everybody says the same thing to you as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ryan, and thank you for being you.
My final question for you, Jesse. Let's say you are just meeting a new client for the first time. They're severely overweight, and for whatever reason, you're only going to have 5 minutes or so with this person, and you can only give them 3 tips to start off their journey, and for whatever reason, you're not going to see them again. What would those 3 tips be?
A very wise man, who I'm a huge fan of, Ryan, once told me that we're all worth our dreams.
Yes.
One of the things I would start with that person was I would start with asking them what their dreams are and why those dreams are important to them. See, for most of us, losing weight, doing push-ups, those kinds of things, it's not necessarily the motivating, inspiring. It fluctuates. It's up and down. That's why so many people struggle with sticking with exercise and nutrition, because there's so many ups and downs with it that pretty soon the scale, the reps, they don't have the same emotional payoff. See, everything we're after in life, it's always emotion. But what does have an emotional payoff is dreams, the dreams that we believe we're worth. So I would ask that person what their dreams are. I would ask them what their dreams are, and if their dreams are, let's say, to, and really gets clear with them on what those are. So let's say their dreams are to see their kids graduate college. And I'd start talking to them about, okay, you know, here's the deal. Every rep that you do in the gym takes you one step closer to seeing your child walk down the aisle at graduation. Every rep that you choose not to do takes you one step further away from that and takes you one step closer to, you know, where we started with the beginning, people who said, I don't have time. And I'd ask them, do you have time for a heart attack?
Yeah.
Right? Because there's always a choice. We pick up the fork and we eat our salad. That probably takes us closer to that dream. We pick up the fork and eat chili cheese fries and buffet, which I'm a huge fan of buffets. I'm definitely a fan of enjoying food every now and then, but have it be an enjoyment, not a staple. Because every action we take, you know, going back to that, what we talked about in the beginning, those crossroads moments, every action we take is either moving us towards our dreams or away from our dreams. As that wise man said, is we're all worth our dreams, and getting clear with that person, if I had 5 minutes with them, has it helped them get clear on what those dreams are? And then talk to them about understanding is that it's those micro steps. It's the few push-ups. It's the saying no to this and saying yes to that. That's going to either put them closer to that dream or more away from it. And that would be where I would start with that person.
That's amazing and so very insightful. Jesse, thank you again so much for your time today. You really have brought so much insight for people starting on their journey, people stuck, and people that are on their way. thank you so much. Thank you for all the value you've brought to people today. Thank you so much.
You bet, Ryan. Thank you, man. Love you, buddy. And I'm really proud of you for doing this. And I look forward to seeing how this evolves for you.
I appreciate that. And I will definitely have you on again in the future. Again, thank you so much.
Man, I'm looking forward to it. Take care, buddy.
Justin gave us so much insight today about getting out of our heads and getting into our lives. I want to thank Jesse again for joining us today. And if you enjoyed today's message, please feel free to share this with a friend, somebody you think this information may be of use to. And in case you haven't been told this today, you are worth your dreams.